Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Chris Mim, Managing Director of Strategic Issues at the U.S. Government Accountability Office. So, Chris, it is critical that government performance is managed effectively, and you reference stat meetings, and GAO has identified leading practices to promote successful data-driven performance reviews, what have been referred to today as quarterly performance reviews at the federal level. Would you tell us more about those best practices or leading practices, and how are performance data being used to drive decisions within the federal government?
As you mentioned, the whole stat kind of movement began with CompStat in New York City in 1994, then went to CityStat in Baltimore in 2000, later to StateStat in Maryland in 2007. And I mean, actually, there had been a version that was done in the state of Washington in 2005. At each point, as it had moved up from a CompStat to a CityStat to a StateStat and now to what Bob Bain calls FedStat or PerformanceStat kind of generally, the question had been, does it scale and can it be used for cross-cutting programs? So what we wanted to do is, as you know, as it's moved to the federal level, is to ask those questions at the federal level and say, you know, does it scale where it's not a matter of, the, as I said back in the original CompStat, cops on dots. You find crime, you move cops there, or you try and use it to anticipate where crime will be and move cops there ahead of time. As we've moved up, the service delivery chain or the causation gets more and more attenuated. And so the issue then becomes, what do you stat, as it were, as you move up? What we did is we looked at the practices down at CityStat and StateStat and CompStat, as well as had the opportunity to look at federal efforts, visit a couple of stat meetings that were being held by federal agencies, where Treasury in particular was very kind to allow us to sit in on theirs. And we promised we wouldn't report the details of any individual discussion, but to just see how the conversation worked. The bottom line of that is that we did conclude it does scale, and that we concluded, or we saw, that it works well on cross-cutting issues, although that is still one that's a work in progress. Agencies were doing a very good job in bringing together other internal partners that were key to the success of a particular goal that was being statted. It was still a work in progress to bring in people outside the agency, which may have a key role in that. Right now, just as a reminder, the requirements are that these quarterly data-driven reviews, which are the federal version of the stat sessions, need to be done on the agency priority goals. And sorry for all the jargon on this, but I mean, there are about 100 of those for the 24 largest agencies in the federal government. Those are the ones that have to be done at least once a quarter. They're the ones where the progress has to be reported on performance.gov. The absolute key to this, and back to Bob Bain, who's the person who's thought the most about this whole stat issue, is that he refers to them as leadership strategies. And so what you're looking for is in-person meetings with the top leadership of the organization, her or his team, and the people that are responsible for achieving a goal in which they are collectively really working the data and saying, where are we in terms of achieving this goal? If we have a performance deficit, what are we going to do differently? And then what follows up after that is just that, the rigorous follow-up that comes back and says, we promised last time or said last time we were going to take this action. Did we take it and did it work? And if it worked, let's see if we can scale it. If it didn't work, let's try something else. And so it's just radical experimentation based on the data to address real problems rather than which is unfortunately the traditional model, which is either decision based on your gut or decision made 60 days at the end of the fiscal year when you start getting your performance information in and say, oh, we didn't meet that goal. How are we going to do it next year? This is as real time, regularly scheduled, active follow-up as you can get it.
I'd like to transition a little bit towards the budget and fiscal path and making it more sustainable. What are some of the challenges affecting the federal budget, both near and long term? And could you give us an overview of the work your GAO has done in this area?
Since the early 1990s, we've had a fiscal model that we use that look at the long-term challenges confronting the federal government. And then in recent years, we've also added a state model as well. And the drivers aren't surprising, but the numbers or the vision is still pretty scary on this stuff. Yeah. It's demographics and rising healthcare costs. And in the demographics, it's the retirement of the baby boom generation, puts an awful lot of pressure on pension programs and other support programs that go to, you know, the retiree population. What that means is that we have a long-term unsustainable fiscal path. And we have a separate dedicated parts of our website at gao.gov that really lay this out and show all the charts and all this. And one of the things is that if you kind of look out 2030, 2040, 2050 and beyond, it gets very, very scary about what's going to happen. Our point on that is that, you know, we as citizens will in the country will obviously take action before we get to, you know, any catastrophic kind of issue. Our point is that the sooner that you're able to take that action, the broader array of challenges and the less draconian any sort of actions that you need to take. These are fundamentally policy calls, though, and calls that we as citizens, you know, as through the voting process, need to make our voices heard on that. So it's not something that GAO says, you know, hey, Congress, here's the right mix of spending reductions versus tax increases that's going to get you there. That's not our role as auditors. Our role is just to identify for the Congress the nature of the challenges that we face, the fact that it's long term, and that there are some decisions that eventually need to be made. Now, those can be postponed and had to be postponed during the recent financial crisis and recession. And, you know, we need to return to it when we're able to.
Are there any strategies you guys have shaped around addressing these issues, these challenges?
I think there's two things that we really have found very beneficial to helping the Congress understand. One is the concept of the fiscal gap, which is what is the combination of spending cuts and or tax increases that would be needed in order to address the size of the hole. And we now find that that's a—I mean, we're not the only ones that came up with that. I don't want to imply that. But, I mean, we now find that that's a fairly common way of talking about and thinking about the problem. The other is that we focus a lot of attention, and we're doing this increasingly, on what are called the fiscal exposures, which are one of the things that we either are implicitly or explicitly, in a sense, on the hook for— that need to be in some way accounted for or thought about in the context of budget decisions.
Mm-hmm. So, Chris, given budget austerity and the complex challenges facing government executives, one of the things we identified in our Six Trends report, the center, was managing risk in the public sector is taking on a new significance. How can agency executives better manage risks?
I think this is absolutely so important and something that I don't consistently see that federal managers are really taking risk management to heart. I think, you know, there's a couple of things that are absolutely essential here is that one is to not think of risk management as a program or initiative that is as something separate, but rather as embedded with in how we do business routinely. I mean, there's always a risk, and I'm a different risk in a different sense of the word. And I'm very sensitive to this because I work on things like Government Performance and Results Act, Strategic Human Capital Management, now Risk Management, to think of, well, Monday I'm going to do GPRA, Tuesday I'll do, you know, high risk, Wednesday I'll do this, Thursday and Friday, maybe Friday afternoon with some hours I have left over, I'll do the mission of my program. And so for those of us that in a sense are selling a lot of this the management stuff and results-oriented management, it's incumbent upon us to be able to show line managers, program managers, how this is inextricably linked to what they're trying to do in order to achieve their mission. And the way we do that is making sure that it's not seen as a one-off or something that's separate from that. A second important thing of this that I've had the opportunity to be in some discussions and in various agencies in which they may be talking about three or four different avenues of courses or options going forward and having very sophisticated discussions of risk management. You know, here's the risks associated with this particular course and here's our risk mitigation strategy and, you know, and all the rest of that. What they don't often do, Michael, is think about what's the risk of the status quo? What's the risk if we do nothing? From everything we've been discussing today is that very often is the most risky position to be in. And so what I want to make sure that agencies do and urge them is that think of the risk of doing nothing. Think of the risk of going or rather think of the risk of continuing along the path that you already are on. And that will help you then calibrate or understand that the options, the opportunities that are out there may not be as risky as you think. They may actually be the lower risk in terms of moving forward.
Chris, your group assessed the implementation of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, better known as the Recovery Act for GAO. Would you elaborate on the insights drawn from the Recovery Act implementation and what lessons have been learned?
There were a couple of absolutely key things that were learned from that. I mean, I think the first thing is that it showed that government can be agile. There was an enormous amount of money that for purposes of having a stimulative effect, you know, which was one of the key purposes of the Recovery Act, needed to move out very, very quickly. And when I say enormous amount, we're talking tens of billions of dollars, you know, within the it was passed in February. So by the end of that fiscal year, they needed to move out an awful lot of money. And then subsequently, obviously, in 2010 and 11, you know, moving forward, there were, you know, in that case, you know, over $100 billion in each of those years that they needed to move out. So it showed that government can be very agile. It also showed that, it can be agile, but it can do it in a way that also safeguards against waste, fraud, and abuse. Second, it showed that collaboration works. Mm-hmm. We worked very closely with our colleagues in the IG community, but also state and local auditors to make sure that we were having a collective impact and not stepping on each other. The third great lesson I think we saw is that leadership is the key. Mm-hmm. The leadership by the vice president, the personal leadership that he showed, Ed DeSev and his team over there, Danny Werfel and that group in OMB, the people in the individual agencies down at the state and local, the governors, mayors. We met, we had people out all around the country looking at the implementation of the Recovery Act, almost without exception, very impressed with the diligence, the seriousness in which they took this, and the understanding of their responsibility to get the money used quickly, but get it used for the purposes for which it was intended and properly, and understanding that if all it would take is a couple of big scandals, and then citizens would quite rightly lose confidence in that. The final thing that I think we learned from this, and it gets to recovery.gov, the website that was set up on this, is the value of real-time transparency, mm-hmm. that it is possible to have information go out to citizens on a quarterly basis that gives very detailed information on how their money is being spent, that we don't have to wait until 90 days or 180 days at the end of the fiscal year and then force people to slog through a 180-page PDF or something like that. You can meet citizens where they are in terms of their use of technology, communicate to them in their ways. The breakthrough that I think on this was the understanding that citizens don't live in federal funding streams. They live in neighborhoods and communities. And if you want to show them what they're getting from their government, you need to use mapping and you need to be able to show them, you know, in the context of this is what this means to my neighborhood and my community. I think those are the four big lessons that I take away.
How can audit agencies change the way they do business to properly respond to 21st century governance challenges? We will ask Chris Mim, Managing Director of Strategic Issues at the U.S. Government Accountability Office, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.